Episode 3625 of the Survival Podcast. It's a Tuesday, the 11th of February, 2025, and we are going to talk today, following up on yesterday's show, about the Matrix and not the movie, though we'll use the analogy there quite a bit. What we're really talking about when we say the Matrix for the purpose of this episode is the real Matrix that we live in. The system of control, the very world in which the analogy of the movie was really all about. It was really, as we talked about yesterday, about us, with a lot of things in it that direct corollary or are direct metaphors for what our world is like. The scene with the black cat where he sees the cat twice, that is a glitch in the Matrix, which really what it symbolizes is when the powers that be change the rules because they feel control slipping away from them. So that would be something like, you know, creating a giant psyop or something like that. Not that any of us have ever seen anything like that. Or the bending spoon, there is no spoon, is really about how many of the barriers in the Matrix are not real. And only when you see that they're not real can you actually banish them. Or dodging bullets, right? Dodging bullets is basically status jujitsu, being able to exist inside that Matrix and not be harmed by it, or at least minimize potential harm by understanding the rules and regulations so that you can actually use them against the agents. All kinds of stuff like that we talked about yesterday. And yesterday's show was life outside the Matrix, basically escaping the Matrix, sliding down the slimy tube that looks like a water park and getting out. But as I admitted multiple times as we were discussing that yesterday, that truly getting out is really difficult to do because in this reality, in this world, the Matrix is all around us. It is a mental enslavement more than a physical enslavement. But the manifestations of the physical limits are real too, meaning that you can say that it's only a mental limitation that we have to take a portion of our life force and give it over to the Matrix in the form of taxes. But if you don't pay your taxes, even if there's a lot of strategies you can use to minimize them, if you just flat don't do it or take those extra steps or what have you, then you go to a place called prison and you get to see what a real Matrix, a hardcore Matrix is really like, and you don't want to be there. So there is this reality. And I actually think it can be fundamentally dangerous, more for other people than for, let's say, the enlightened that are already stepping out, to use terminology that sounds like you can completely 100% fully exit the Matrix. Because you know what happens. When you give people 100% expectation and they realize I'll never get there, then what do? They don't even attempt to get like 50% or 60% or 70% of the way there. We as human beings are treated by the systems, and it is systems with an S, plural. We're treated like cattle. And the problem we really have is we behave like cattle. And I've talked about this before, but the reality is cattle will go feral, but they don't really want to. If they have everything that they need, they'll just kind of hang out. And once they know that there's a barrier, even if that barrier isn't real, they tend not to test it. So if you have cattle and you leave your electric fence go off, sooner or later one may break through the fence and then everybody follows them out. But it's usually some kind of derp that kind of blunders into it and goes, oh, wait a minute, that didn't hurt. That's supposed to hurt. Oh, look, I'm out. Look at that grass is green over there. And then everybody just follows the leader. But it's not intentional. So much so, there's a thing called a cattle guard. And if you've never been in, you know, a place where cows are, maybe you've never seen one. A cattle guard is so that you can have a gate that's not a gate. And what I mean by that is you want to be able to drive a truck through there, or you can even train a horse to walk over a cattle guard. But you don't want to have to get out, open the gate, get out, close the gate. You just want the cows to stay in. So on a lot of these ranches, what they have is it's basically a series of pipes with gaps in them. And if the cow tries to step on that gap a foot falls in there and it fucking hurts. And the cow's like, no, I ain't doing this. And it scares the cow. It hurts the cow, right? So the cow sees the cattle guard and goes, nope, I've done that before. So their own intelligence is used against them in that they know there's a problem, but they can't figure out how to solve it. Here's something really interesting to me. And the first time I saw this, I didn't know what to think about it. We were out in West Texas. This is back in my days when I did underground construction, and we were putting in everything from fiber optic cable to water pipes. And we're at a place called Graham, really out in the middle of nowhere. And we're going by, and I see this gate that's not a gate, and a little concrete pad that goes through it, and it's got black and white stripes painted on it. And the guy's working with Gail. I said to him, I said, what is that? He goes, damn, Yankees don't know nothing about a cattle guard. I'm like, I know what a cattle guard is. I'm not a freaking dumbass, but that's not a cattle guard. He said, oh, you've never seen a painted cattle guard before. And I said, no. He goes, you have to have cattle that have been educated to what a cattle guard is. And then all you got to do, if you have concrete, you can just paint stripes on it. They think it's a cattle guard. They won't try. Right. This is how human beings are behaving in this world of the Matrix today. We have stopped testing the limits, right? We are supposed to be feral, and the goal of the system, the real goal of the Matrix, in my opinion, and it is an opinion, is the full 100% domestication of human beings, to domesticate us. That's why they love the education system. How do you domesticate an animal? You go steal it from its mama while it's still sucking on a tit, and you bottle feed it, and you raise it among your kind to see itself as subservient to your kind, and then you take an animal that could have crushed you to death in a half a second, and it complies, it's gentle. And the longer you repeat that process, you eventually get to the point where you have a fully domesticated mama and dada, right? And then the baby is domesticated by its own parents, and you have eternal slavery for that animal on behalf of mankind. If it's a cow or a pig, I don't have a lot of problem with it, because that's part of how we have established civilization. Okay. And an animal really isn't a slave. It's a creature that's being cared for. But try that shit with a pig. Try that shit with a pig. If you let your electric fence go down with pigs, there's a period of time where they're like, nah, man, I touched that shit with my nose before. That friggin' hurts. I ain't doing it again. There's some hard wire in the pig's brain that says, you know, I really don't want to be here. I want to go over there, and I want to go over there. And why? I don't know. I just want to explore. We've never actually fully domesticated the pig, in my opinion. Okay? It may go out and come back, but so does the cat. And cats are not fully domesticated either. They are kind of a form of like a tamed feral. Right? And this is what I mean by that. You let a cat out at night, it goes murder. It goes full-on serial killer, right? It goes out and starts wiping things out, bringing home and putting the guts on your front porch and going, look what I did, right? There's a feral nature to these certain animals that you never really fully domesticate them. You just make them comfortable with human companionship. That's what we should be. We should be comfortable with companionship of other humans, including other humans in other groups or tribes or divisions or what have you. But we should never give up to the point where we become domesticated. Now, you try that shit with a pig, and that pig will occasionally just go, man, I know this is going to hurt, but let me touch that. Okay, nothing happened. Last time I tried that shit, there's some sort of thing that's not always on, but it sooner or later, like, and it tries it again, and as soon as it realizes that wire's not hot, as soon as it realizes there's a crack in the fence, as soon as it realizes there is any way out, that pig is out. And it might even come back because it kind of likes you, but it ain't staying and it's not being contained. We need to be more like that pig. We need to be the pig, not the cow. And we have become the cow. And that's why we have this problem with the Matrix today. So we're going to talk about the reality of being the pig and knowing they want you to stay in, but I'm going to go out whenever I want to, but I might come back once in a while. As long as I don't think they're going to turn me into bacon today, I might have some benefit by associating with these other beings. That's what we're talking about today. Before we do that, let us go ahead and talk about our sponsors of the day. Hey, when it comes to an animal that actually has been domesticated, as much as you can an animal anyway, it would be the dog, man's best friend. The problem with man's best friend is if man's best friend is not taught how to be a good citizen in the household or a good citizen on the homestead, man's best friend can still be your best friend and a big effing problem. What you want is core canine obedience. Once you have that, you can then take that dog, you can make it a hunting dog that points birds and retrieves them for you. You can make it a protection animal that defends your home and your family. You can take it all the way to the level that Joel Riles over at Fortress Canine, and I'm wearing his shirt today, takes his animals with that type of training on full-on protection duty. Or you can just have a really good citizen of your home that is happy to be there and maybe barks at the door but knows when to shut up and doesn't mess things up. You know, all of that stuff. But it all starts with core obedience. Now, about 2 years ago, my wife made a barter blanket deal that brought Belle into our lives. That's my Malinois Shepherd cross that is a Fortress Canine. And part of that deal was that when Joel came here and brought her here, that I would give him some consulting. And together we worked on canineacademy.us and developed the formula of it today to help you be a better trainer of your dog. So check out canineacademy.us and you'll learn how to train your dog. And in fact, you'll get trained on how to train your dog. Next up today is Anton's Land of Biltong. Now look, the truth is I love all my sponsors. I really do. And I believe in every product that's recommended on this show or it wouldn't happen. I turn down people as potential sponsors all the time. I don't care how much money they have. I will not represent junk. It doesn't matter. This is one place you'll never see the host sell out. But then there's, like, I like this product. It's a good product. Maybe I even have this product. But there are some things that I have some passion for. Delicious food, I got passion for. But, you know, I got to be low carb. I got to be looking at protein and fat. Biltong fits that perfectly. How passionate am I about Anton's Land of Biltong? Well, I get paid in Biltong. That's a pretty good gig to have, by the way. That's a barter agreement, all right? And actually, see, what Anton does is he pays me about half in Biltong and half in money. It's actually a perfect sponsor for this show. Maybe that's why I picked it. Kind of have one foot in both words, barter and fiat, because I got to pay bills and fiat. That's what we do with Anton's Land of Biltong. Check out his site. Try his Biltong. You will absolutely love it. It is just one of the most beautiful things you can do with a piece of red meat is turn it into Biltong. And if you want to try it and have it really be the right way, the South African way, that's where Anton's from. Check it out again, Anton's Land of Biltong. All right, now let's move on and talk about In the Matrix, but not of it. Now, I want to start off with, we do need, and I think this is a very important thing, we need to acknowledge that we're not going to completely exist apart from the Matrix. We're just not. And when we look at the reality around us, there's no way that we can. It's not a movie. It's not an allegory. It's the real world is both the Matrix and freedom in one place coexisting. And therefore, we have to coexist with both realities. And when you say, I'm going to live, you know, I'm going to get some friends together, we're going to go out and start this community, and we're going to grow all our own food, and we're not going to rely on a system at all, even the freaking Amish are existing in both worlds. And they have a very tight and a religious-centric community, which causes a common ideology that's about the only way anybody's ever pulled it off to that level is with that level of common ideology. And most of us don't have that level of common ideology, even those of us that are of the same faith. And when you say faith, you'd be like Christian, but even people that are both Southern Baptists don't have kind of the absolute commonality that the Amish do, that absolute devotion to that one ideal that allows that community to exist. And they still exist in both worlds. You know, they are selling, for instance, Amish furniture for fiat dollars. Hell, they even in the last election in Pennsylvania voted to help get Orange Man elected, thanks to Scott Pressler. So if they're not fully out, you're not fully out. Let's not pretend that we're going to be. And there's a danger, and that is preventing others from seeking that crack in the fence to see how much freedom they can obtain. There's just a human nature thing And it's very, to me, because I've never been this person, it's very difficult for me to understand. And I don't know if I ever will understand it, but I have learned to accept it. And that is that there are people that when you tell them about a thing, if you don't clearly articulate, and getting 10% there is good, if they don't see the ability to get 100% there, they say it's not worth doing. Somebody in here said something about their family is that way. They won't even try. That's what I'm talking about. Nino said that. That's my family. They're scared to try. They even have land. It's crazy, isn't it? People that... And here's another example. So I had this really good friend. I did an old show about him one time, and I wasn't very kind to him in that show, but I was being honest that he's a freaking human Eeyore, like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. It'll never work, right? And this guy was just so down about everything all the time, except he was like almost manic. I don't think he's manic, but he's almost manic. Like when everything's going right, yeah. As soon as one little fucking thing goes wrong in his life, right? And there's so many people like that. It takes one little failure to knock them back from 100 successes. New old man says it's crazy. It is crazy. And so I can't understand it, but I accept it. Therefore, I think that if we want to take as many people on this journey as possible, we need to not use words that are absolute, like all my own food. Ain't going to happen. Completely outside the system. Ain't going to happen. And we actually harm our own movement when we use those absolute terms, because it's the same phenomenon of, well, are you going to start buying Bitcoin? I missed the opportunity. Did you say that at $600? Yeah. Were you wrong? Yeah. Okay. Did you say it at $1,100? Yeah. Were you wrong? Yeah. Say it at $10,000? Yeah. Were you wrong? Well, yeah. Did you say it at $20,000? Yeah. Were you wrong? Yeah. Did you do that at 40? Yeah. 50? Yeah. 60? Yeah. But you're right now, You just HFSP, right? Have fun staying poor. And there are people who you cannot crack through that layer with. But most people are reasonable, and most people can be reached if you give them the understanding that this is one step on a long journey, that you never actually get to the final destination, but you can be 50 and miserable or 50 and free. Let's say you're talking to a 30-year-old. We need to be phrasing our things that way for our own benefit and for the benefit of others that we're talking to. Now, I'll talk a little bit about the root of today's title, because it'll be an elephant in the room if we don't. In the matrix, not of it. Well, those of you who are of the Christian faith will know the phrase from the Bible, in the world, but not of it. In other words, my real home is somewhere else. I'm temporarily here in this existence. There's something more for me. But I think what a lot of people that are familiar with that don't understand, this is a very universal spiritual ideal. You go into like 1970s hippie-ish New Ageism, and this same concept is there, in the world but not of it, that we are beings of light that come here to occupy this shell for a time, but when our time is here, we return to something beyond where our real home is. This is also a common ideal in faiths like Hinduism and Buddhism and many faiths, Eastern and Western alike. Many shamanic faiths, they might not have the exact same phrase, but they have the exact same concept that we are here, but we are also there. And there is where we are for always, and here is where we are for now. And so that's not exactly what I'm saying today. It just really worked out. Like when I was coming up with titles, this is a good way to be in and out, but it is a good way to think about it. Because if you think about all of those spiritualities, whether Christian or New Age or Eastern philosophical, they all have that mindset, but it also means you are here and what you do here matters. And you're not just, you know, even though you're only here temporarily, a human lifetime, if you live it right, is pretty long. You might as well get on with it. You might as well do something so you are bettering yourself for that eventuality. And I will say this, if you're an atheist, you don't believe in any of this thing, and you think when you die, you're worm dirt, I may not agree with you, but I respect your belief. You can still learn from the analogy. Most analogies are not based on a real story. They're based on a fable type story to allow you to understand it. And so we can be in this world that is the matrix, the controlled society that we end up stuck in at times. And we can also be apart from it at the same time. Okay, Carson, I'm going to give you, I almost beat you up there. I'll let it go. I saw the second part of the phrase. All right. Now, that next thing I want to talk about before we get, I got 10 ways to be in the matrix, but not of it. But I want to talk about something from the movie again, like we did yesterday. Jacked into the matrix, man. So when you hear jacked into something, that almost sounds like you're all in on it. Like you want to be part of it, but that's not what the characters in the movies meant. They just meant they had to plug themselves in so they could go as an energetic being inside the matrix that wasn't real. It was created like a hologram, but they had to be jacked in to go in, to visit, and to alter the reality of the matrix to their own agenda and goals. Now, again, they were trying to bring the matrix down. Do you notice something interesting about the movie? We talked about it yesterday with the main character's name, the hero, Neo, meaning new. Meaning if you were new, you were a replacement for that which was old. It was a cycle. The Matrix was never coming down. It was never coming down. We did this before, then we'll do it again. Now, the metaphor there to me is you're not going to bring down the Matrix. You're not going to change human history for as long as humans have recorded history, and probably before we recorded history, or probably when we were recording history, but the recordings themselves were lost. You know, the age of Atlantis, I've often said, I don't believe that Atlantis was a place. I think it was a time. There may have been some places enigmatic of the time. There's one place that looks particularly like it may be that, and it's not an island. It's an area in Africa, in basically the desert today, but at the time that Atlantis would have been around, it was all like a green lush belt in that part of Africa. There's some really unique things there. But that time came and went. And maybe we lost records of this type of control being used. Because if you have any group of people with authority set over others, no matter how benevolent those people initially are, even if the first generation of them remains benevolent, the system itself, whether it's hereditary or elected, won't matter. The system itself becomes an entity onto itself. And somebody said yesterday in the comments about yesterday's show, the purpose of government is the continuity of government. Everything else is just extra. And that's what I'm saying, that system will continue to evolve until it crashes. Eventually, it will exceed the capacity of control that it tries to exert. Some sort of popular uprising will happen, or simply collapse under its own weight, like the Soviet Union in the 1980s. And we've done it before, and we'll do it again. And once we understand that, then we can say, okay, so our purpose is to build the best we can for our future heirs and for ourselves in the current reality. And that requires a duality of understanding. I can't completely give myself over to this thing because it's not me. It's not what I really am. It's not what humans really are. But shit, a whole lot of humans have decided it is, and we will always be the minority. Zion will always be the small group fighting the masses who are happy to stay plugged in. So that's where we're coming from today. All right, let's start off with, or let's go ahead and go through 10 ways that we can be in the matrix, but not of it. The first one is what we would call strategic engagement. And it starts to uncover so rapidly the reality we're talking about today. Because what I have for my kind of my phrase that goes with this is leverage fiat tools like mortgages, investments, insurance, while minimizing dependency. And so, oh, you changed your name again. Wow, what a shock. Anyway, he knows who I'm talking to. Changed it back to one of the previous names. Anyway, most people are not going to go out and buy a house for cash. And inside the matrix, which even if we want to exist apart from it, we're in it. The rules of the matrix mean that paying cash for a house is probably a bad decision. That if I can mortgage my, now right now, your wrong account. How many accounts do you have? Anyway, right now, it's not as obvious what I'm saying because we're at the end stage of an empire. So things are about as upside down as they can possibly get. So not only are mortgage rates high, but real estate prices are high. And usually you don't get those two things at the same time. High interest rates on a mortgage usually suppress the value of housing, but we've played this game to the full level for over 50 years now, since 1971. So we're in this imbalance right now. So what I'm going to say may not completely make sense to you, but if you, even in this environment, if you can get a mortgage interest of 7% and you have the capital to buy a $300,000 house, you'd probably be better off mortgaging the house and taking the capital and investing it, and all you have to do is be 1% better than the rate on the house, and you're ahead. So that's a math decision. There's no emotion in that, right? There's no way in the world that we would look at that and go, but I feel or I think, unless we're being lured into either the false attraction of either side of this dichotomy, right? It doesn't make any sense. You literally could do the following. If you could make 10% on your money and you have 100% of the capital, you could put the money into a thing that spits out a dividend of 10% and use the dividend on the capital to pay the house payment, effectively having no house payment. But by the time the house was fully paid for, you have all of the base money still there. You have the equity in the home and the capital, and you've only spent the interest. In fact, you have more than you started with if the numbers work out that way. So most people don't, when they talk about paying cash for a house, they're just bullshitting anyway. They don't have the cash anyway. But even if you did, it would be a bad decision. And as soon as you sit back and you use math on this decision, the path forward is obvious now, isn't it? And this is, you know, without invoking, you know, the word I like to use that a lot of you don't like, which is Bitcoin. I'm telling you that you can do better than the rates on a mortgage interest in many very conservative investments, at least by a little bit. So it's just not something that you would do unless you're doing it to spite the system, which means the system's actually winning. Because you made a bad decision just despite the system. It's not good for you. It's not good for your family. It's not good for your heirs. So we shouldn't do that. Insurance. If you have something of value, then you can self-insure, meaning if it blows up, you pay the price. Or you can pay a company that is definitely part of the matrix, a small portion of the value on that. And should you? I think it depends. There's many ways to have insurance. There's many ways to have insurance. For instance, I insure my Bitcoin, just as one thing, very inexpensively, using a hardware wallet. And for every so much Bitcoin, I add a different hardware wallet. That way, each one only presents so much risk. So these things are a little over $100. So if you had, let's say, $50,000 worth of Bitcoin, $100,000 or $50,000 worth of Bitcoin, $100, to have additional security that it cannot be stolen because it's not stealable unless you plug it in. That's the only time you're ever at risk at all because it is now in cold storage. That's cheap insurance. So I'm not going to go to an insurance company to insure my Bitcoin. I'm using technology to insure my Bitcoin. But technology can't insure your house. Now, the right technology may reduce the cost of insurance on your house. Strategically buying the right house, using the right construction materials will also help insure your house. But in the end, if a tornado blows your house into bits or a fire burns it to the ground or an airplane lands on top of it, you might need insurance. If you have an income and a spouse and your spouse depends on your income, which almost every spouse that's in a two-income family does depend on the other spouse's income, then you probably want to insure your life. Now, eventually you may accumulate enough wealth that you no longer feel you need the insurance. You can reduce the expense of it one way or the other, but it's still a very simple economic mathematical decision. None of these things are outside the matrix. Now, we may continue to build things. They're at least partially outside the matrix. More types of private insurances and things like that. Like I talked about health shares yesterday. Are they the matrix or are they not? They're kind of both. They're kind of in the matrix, but not of it. They work outside the system's rules. But yet, you know, I'm not answering questions that are specifically technical on Bitcoin today, Huxley. I'm sorry. Next up today, status jujitsu in action. We did talk about this some yesterday, but this is the most important lesson probably today, is that a lot of things that people think they cannot do can actually be done without them being black market down there in the bottom of the flag behind me. They can move into the gray market or even into the white market through proper structuring. And this is the fundamental of the movie, right? That even the agents have to follow the rules of the Matrix, right? Like, we can defeat them, Neo, because they have to live with the rules of the Matrix. And the reality is, we don't really have to. We have to live with some of them, but the more we learn to transcend the rules, the more we become the masters of even the agents. That's what business structuring is. Right, that is what tax structuring is. There are ways not to pay no taxes. People that tell you that will wind your ass up eventually in some place like federal prison. I don't want to go to Club Fed. But there are ways to pay almost no taxes. To complete, and I mean, you again, this is something people don't understand when I talk this way. I'm saying that if you did more than the tax forms that you have to do, if you recorded everything you did, you disclosed all of it and set it down in front of an auditor in the IRS, there's not dick shit fuck all that they can do about it because you followed the book. You followed the code. In fact, what I'm saying here when it comes to taxes, you have to think like a bureaucrat that doesn't want to be limited in what the bureaucrat is able to do or allow. So what a bureaucrat always does, especially a bureaucrat that wants to stay employed, is they read all the processes, all the procedures, all the rule books. And then there's two ways that bureaucrat moves forward. They move forward with, I don't actually give a shit about anything but keeping my job, and I don't care how many people get hurt or fined or whatever. I'm going to be considered a success because I show up every day, I do my job every day, and I follow the book. And then you get good bureaucrats. There's some of them that exist. And they're like, well, it says that this person can't do this thing, but I think they should be able to do this thing. And some of those bureaucrats will tell the person, well, you can't do the thing, but did you know if you did this or you simply called it that, they'll tell you how to get. Now, you can't rely on that, and you certainly can't trust them without double checking. I never trust anybody speaking on behalf of the state. Especially cops. Sorry, cops, but I don't. You ever think about this? This is an aside right here. Congress passed law that said it's illegal for you to lie to Congress, but they specifically passed the law that says it's okay for Congress to lie to you or to each other. Congressmen on the floor of the Senate or the House are not required to tell the truth. There is no consequence for lying. Now, if they're being reviewed, sworn in, like as a witness, sure, but in any other capacity, a congressman or a senator can blatantly lie on the floor of the House or Senate, and they pass the law to protect themselves. It's just a form of qualified immunity. It's illegal for you to lie to a cop, but it's not illegal for a cop to lie to you. Cops can lie their asses off to you. And you know who's gotten most offended when I've said that? People in my family. I have quite a few cops in my family. When I say that in front of their wives, the wives get incensed. That's not true. And their husband, if they're honest, and about all of them in my family are, they're like, well, honey, actually, he's right. We lie to people all the time. And they're actually shocked by it. Like, oh, what? Oh, yeah. We tell them we have evidence. We don't. We tell them there's a witness when there isn't. Right. So I'll never listen to that bureaucrat. But what I'm trying to make the point is there are bureaucrats that try to be helpful. And they will actually guide you through what to do. Or if you think, remember the Disney movie, Incredibles? when the super guy, he ended up working for an insurance company. His boss was busy. Somehow all of your customers know exactly which form to fill out, right? They do exist. You have to be that for yourself. You study all the files, all the forms, all of, or you hire somebody to do it for you and you say, this is what I want to do. How do I put myself in a position to not only be able to do it, but in the most advantageous position to be as untouchable by the system as possible because all the boxes are checked? That's status jujitsu. That's how we maximize freedom. That's how we say, oh, I can't do this? Wait a minute. Does that apply to a church? Because we're a food church. Core and central to our belief system is that people need to eat certain types of food and not eat certain other types of food. Am I a real church? I have the piece of paper that says that I am. Can you come in? Are you a member of the church? No. Sorry. Do you have a warrant? No. I know this is a public place of business, but it's not. It's a private membership only. You're not a member. Could you find somebody to sponsor you in, officer friendly? Because I'm not doing it. No. I'm sorry. Wah, wah. You have to leave. You have to leave. You have to profess that you believe these things, and I don't think you've done that. You don't have a sponsor. Nobody's vouched for you. You're not a member of our church. Our church is a little bit more exclusive. And there's a lot of other ways to do that. Next is parallel systems. And this is something we've talked a lot about over the years. Parallel economies. Parallel systems to resolve conflict. How to participate in decentralized alternatives. That would be private health care, local currencies, or I think we've moved past local currencies, haven't we? I think local currencies had their day. They were a flawed idea. And we didn't have a solution, but now we do. Now we have Bitcoin, or for some of you stubborn people, cryptocurrencies. Whatever works for you, I'm fine with. And I've always said that even since I've become like nothing but Bitcoin, F it all, like that's for wealth storage. Like I see a place for privacy currencies like a Monero because it's still fun. You can still, it's still got liquidity. It can still be turned into dollars and it's fungible, meaning there's a price at the time that's equal to fiat. And one Monero is one Monero, like one Bitcoin is one Bitcoin, and it's private. And it works for things like that. I can see a local autonomous group using something like a Monero as their payment system and Bitcoin as their wealth storage. But I think that's going to pass because we're going to end up things with like Fedimint and all. I don't want to get deep into crypto today or Bitcoin technology today. But basically every case there is for something other is being solved by technology innovation because it's programmable money. But we can still use mainstream systems when they're necessary. And that's why, at least for now, we need to be using as currencies something that is fungible and something that is convertible and has liquidity into fiat, because that gives it value within its internal system. In other words, nobody's going to take, you know, Libyan currency, for instance, right? It doesn't have to. But inside Libya, it works specifically because there is liquidity from whatever the hell they call their currency into dollars or euros. And for now, that's still necessary because it's there. No, Hush can go screw Carson. That guy's nuts and a liar. Anyway, and then we have the idea of if you take the king's money, you're subject to the king's directives and edicts. And I think this really applies to government employees. There's a lot of things that I see happen to government employees, and people are like, Jack is a libertarian or an anarchist or an agorist. You should be offended by it. I'm not. You chose to work for the government, and therefore you are subject to the government's rules and regulations of how you do your job, even if it's not what you want to do. And that's really true of any employment, but it's really true of a government employment. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about things like you want to start a business, and there's a grant that you can get from the government to help start your business. And it's free money to you. It's not free, but it's free money to you. I've always said, the day that I will not use any of those things is the day that I feel every dime the federal government has ever taken from me has been restored. And that is not just income tax. That's income tax. That's the money that I paid into Social Security that I know I will never get back. That's the money the bastards have stolen from me with inflation, and it's the money they have exported out of my country and given to others. It's all of it. It's every single thing they've taken from me, and I know I'll never catch up. So I'll use any of it, but there's a catch. If you take the Crown's money, you're subject to the Crown's jurisdiction and how that money gets used. This is the thing about that. That there's a book for that. There's a stack of paperwork that tells you what you have to do and how long you have to do it for. So I think if I was a farmer, I would never go into farming corn or potatoes or wheat, or as a dairy farmer or an egg farmer in the mainstream society. Even if I had the capital to push a business like that, I would never do it and be subsidy based, because that's eternal. That's eternal. That means I'm producing eggs at a loss, but I'm only making a profit because the king gave me the gold coins, and now I'm profitable, but I must stay with allegiance to the king for this endeavor for eternity until I sell it to somebody else or die. I'm not making that deal. But there are a lot of programs where the king says, thou shalt take this money and use it in thy way, and after a period of 4 annual cycles, thou shalt be free to do with it as thy please. An example would be high tunnel grants from the NRCS. And that's exactly, it's a 4-year thing. So you apply for the high tunnel. They tell you what you have to do. You have to plant a cover crop on the ground in it. You can only, you know, like some of it has to be actually used for in-ground farming instead of like an aquaponics thing or something. But if you want the money, that's what you have to do. But you have to use that the way you agree to use it for 4 years. And you could take something that's like a $20,000 high tunnel system. And by the time it's all said and done with and up and running, you've come out of pocket $5,000. That's $15,000 freaking dollars of the king's money. And at 4 years, no one ever comes and looks at it again. And from talking to people in NRCS, they're actually one of the few government organizations that are kind of busy. They'll probably come around once or twice after you set it up, unless you invite them, and you're not going to hear from them anyway. That is a deal that I would make. There are things like rebates on solar. So if I'm going to put solar on my house, I'm not going to hold my fucking breath and be like, well, I'm going to pay full price. I'll show them. You're an idiot. Of course you should take the rebates or tax, anything you can take back. You should take it. And when people don't do that, here's what I think about people that bitch about that. They have fucking nothing. They've accomplished fucking nothing. They never will do anything. So it's very easy to be a Puritan when you're sitting there like a freaking potato rotting on the ground. Well, I wouldn't do that. That's because you don't fucking have anything. I never see anybody do that. Like, well, I could have got $15,000 for my high tunnel and I didn't take it. Where's your high tunnel? Oh, it's right over here. I never see that shit. You know why? Because it doesn't exist. Because those people are snipers for the sake of sniping. Hold on. Hilux, how is the gem show? Hilux Radio is somebody else in the chat. I saw Hilux and immediately thought of the Toyota truck, and we don't have real freedom until we can buy a $10,000 Toyota Hilux in America again. Anyway, that's parallel systems, and we need to be thinking about parallel systems in that what that actually means is if I'm growing food on my little farm, I might sell a lot locally, but I still might sell some off into wholesale retail operation as well. That's exactly what we did with our ducks. A little bit different. Actually, no, we were in a couple retail stores too. So that is the system. But our biggest business was with restaurant chefs, and there was a way that was handled, and I'll leave it to that, and you can figure it out for yourself. And then there were people that just drove up to the house and said, I want 4 dozen eggs, and we said, that'll be $40, and they handed us 220s, and we talked to them about what we do and showed them the ducks and the dogs, and they said, I'll be back next month. Those are two different worlds. Two different worlds. Parallel systems. Next is selective rule breaking. I love this. I am not a rule breaker. I am a rule raper. I will absolutely abuse and murder rules if I know I can get away with it. And I'm not necessarily talking about breaking the law here. What I want to do before we even dig in this one, there are three types of rules in the world. Three. There's actually four. There's natural law. I'm going to leave that one out of this because it doesn't apply. Natural law is shit like gravity. You drop shit, it falls. So you can go up on like a 10-story building and say, I don't believe in gravity, and step off, and gravity believes in you, and you are the coyote on the Roadrunner show, and you're gone, right? If there is a place for that light body to go, you're finding out what it is, but you're not going to be bothering us anymore, okay? But there are societal rules, weak laws, and strong laws, okay? Well, it's not like magnetism, strong nuclear force, and weak nuclear force, right? There's three types of force there. So societal laws, basically, those are things you just say everybody believes. Well, you can't do that. You can't do that. Well, I'm over here doing it, so nothing happened. These are multiple levels of this, too, and how much propaganda has gone in. So one of these laws would be every child should go to college. Now, if you said that in 1950, people would have looked at you like you're an absolute idiot, which is an appropriate way to look at somebody. But between 1950 and 2025, nothing's really changed about that. What do you mean everybody should go to college? And nobody thinks everybody has to, but they do not want to challenge the rule that everybody should. Well, of course, everybody can't go. Some people are too stupid. Some people don't have the money. Some people, you know, just whatever circumstance. But if you could, you should. No. The person is extremely creative, wants to work with their hands. It might be better off like in a tech, like two tech schools, one in like mechanical things and one in like welding and fabrication. That person may be able to build a life way better than most people with a degree. Some people are too dumb to go to college. They shouldn't go. Now, a lot of them do now. That's what's actually screwed up college. Everybody believed this bullshit law, this bullshit rule, and they take stupid people in college now. I was explaining this to my grandson the other day. We were talking about certain courses you need to take in the high school years to get into college. And I said, there are people going to tell you things like you have to have 4 years of higher math. Like you have to have algebra one, geometry, algebra two, and like calc. And that's not true. Or you have to have 2 years of a foreign language to get into college. It's not true. Now, highly competitive universities may still be that way. But when I was a kid, if you wanted anything beyond like community college, you literally had to do that. Well, see, people still have that in their head. That's not a rule. There's lots of things in life that are not a rule. You're nobody if you don't owe somebody money. Not a rule. These are societal constructs. These are the walls in your dreams that limit you because you put them there and believe in them, like I said yesterday. Then there's what we call weak laws. There's actually some mechanism of enforcement. It may be a private mechanism, like you are a member of a club, and we won't let you in if you don't dress the right way, right? It may be a law of the state that says if you do this thing and you get caught, we give you a $100 fine. But if you can make $800 a week doing it and you get caught once a year, okay. Here's another example. Now, I want you to understand what I'm about to say was not interfering with any handicapped person's ability to park a car somewhere and be close to my school. But when I was a teenager, especially like my last year of high school, I know this will shock some of you, but I used to show up sometimes right on the edge of being late. And there was a parking lot at the middle school that the high school kids parked in. How the hell that happened, I don't know. Probably because the high school was built before kids normally had cars, and the middle school had a lot of space. So we would park in the middle school parking lot and have to walk about, that was about a quarter mile walk. Well, if you're going to be late in 2 minutes, that's too far. So there were some parking spots right outside the school nobody ever parked in for handicapped cars. Now, the penalty at the time for parking in that place was a $20 ticket. It's not exactly cheap in 1988, but I had 20 bucks if I needed it. So if I was going to be late for school, I'd pull right in that freaking parking spot. And I'd go up and I'd go in my homeroom and do all my things. And then about, like, we could leave the school once we were seniors. I would go move my car at lunch break or during senior lounge. And if I happened to get caught, once a month, I just figured I had a reserve parking spot when I needed it for $20 a month. Now, there was about six of these freaking parking spots, and you know who parked in it? Nobody. I never saw anybody parked in there. When I talked about parking in the EV spots at the local Albertsons up here that nobody ever used, I had like four people angry at me and one really angry at me. I still ain't seen anybody park in there except people doing what I'm doing. Okay? So when the whole parking lot's full and there's this perfect space right there, and it's for EV vehicles anyway, I just park in the damn thing. And if they run, what are they going to do? There's no, I checked, by the way, there's no law. This is a societal control law. But even if there was, if I was going to get a ticket for $20, I'm parking that bitch every day. And if I get one ticket a month, I have my own personal parking space. These are weak laws, laws with dull teeth to them. You can build loss into your operational model if it's an economic model. And then we have what we call strong laws. Strong laws are, yeah, caught doing this. You got a problem. The fine will exceed any amount of money that you ever made. Or you're going to prison, or you're going to jail for even 6 months, and it's going to fuck up your life long term. Don't fucking do that. So before we even talk about selective rule breaking, you need to know what the consequences are of the rule that you're choosing to break. Once you do that, then you can understand which laws are merely obstacles versus those that carry real consequences. And you can understand those three types of rules. And now you can make a decision that, yeah, if they catch me the first time that I'm caught selling this product off my farm, if the like, because the cops don't care. So this is some sort of like state inspector or something. And you research, you're like, I'm going to get a $150 fine and told not to do it anymore. If I'm not going to make a hell of a lot more than that, I'm not going to do it anyway. So I'm going to do it on the down low. And if the inspector shows up or the department of making you sad of whatever division shows up and says, bad, bad boy. First of all, I already know if I'm nice and go, I didn't know. I'm probably not even getting the fine. You need to stop doing this. And you know, I'm not going to say, listen, motherfucker, you can't tell me what to do. No, no, no. Oh, shit. I didn't know. And then what am I going to do? I'm going to go right back to doing it a little bit differently. I'm going to try to find another way around that regulation. And if he comes back again, I'm going to say, but I changed these things. So it's not what you said it was. I did what you asked. Well, you're still wrong. Here's your $150 fine. Okay, you can wipe your ass with it. I'll just pay it. Those are weak laws. If I know the first time they show up, they're going to seize my property, I'm not doing that. This is about not doing things for purely ideological reasons. This is about the risk-reward calculation in the mind. Next is using debt as a tool, not as a chain. Now, I really believe that debt is probably the most useful tool to enslave modern man in society today. Okay? It is a huge, huge chain and ball on the neck of most people. And it is so much so that even private institutions that aren't the creditors, right? Right? They are the ones that will often look at it as whether or not you make a good little boy for them. Here's what I mean. As I was coming up in my sales career and I started to get really well known and became really successful at it, I started making really good money. And what I thought was good money, apparently to this one company I interviewed with, wasn't enough money. I was knocking down right around $200,000. And I had only been in sales for a few years, no college degree, no nothing like that. And this opportunity came up. And I'm like, yeah, I'll look at that because this looks like you can make a lot of money. And you could. You could make about $600,000-$700,000 in this job. And it wasn't some fluff in the back of a newspaper or something. Like, this was legitimately the money that could be made doing the job well enough to not get fired. Like, if you weren't making that much money, you weren't going to get fired. And I looked at it and went, I can do all this shit. And I applied for this job and I got to the second interview. And, you know, they were a very professional company. And a gal called me back from their HR department and said, we've decided not to do a final interview with you. We're going to pass on you. And as I always did in those situations, whether I lost a deal or a job opportunity, well, can you tell me what I did wrong so that in future opportunities I can do a better job and present myself better? Because I feel like I did really good. She said, actually, you did great. On some levels, you were the best candidate we interviewed for this position. What? Why didn't, and I'm a little bit incensed, like, why didn't I at least get the callback for the third interview? Well, we decided that you haven't made enough money yet. Okay, I'm all in. Like, explain this to me. Well, see, the thing is, people that have made this kind of money before, they generally have two or three houses, they have their kids in private school, and that means they are going to absolutely throw themselves 90 hours a week into this job because they have to pay for everything they've already. And I said, you know, I want you to know two things. And I was very nice about this. I wanted to maintain this as a cordial relationship in case something came of it later. So I'll tell you two things, though. First of all, you're completely off base. I'm the most money-motivated man you will ever talk to in this world. And I would have given you that amount of effort to earn that amount of money, which is how I got where I am in the first place and how I got so good at what I do, right? But here's the second thing. I don't want to work for you now. I would never work for a company that would use that in their hiring decision. So I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate you being honest with me. And maybe in the future, we'll have some sort of joint thing that we can do with what I'm doing now or something I do in the future. So I want to keep this channel open. But I would never work for a company that feels they need their employee to be enslaved to their own personal debt in order to do the job well. But that's how powerful the slavery of debt can be, that corporations that are going to hire somebody to make $500,000 a year look at it and say, unless this person's already in this deep of a pool of debt, we don't want them. Because, you know, they'll be happy to make $500,000 a year, and we want them to put out that extra effort to make $600,000. That's exactly where they were coming from. You're too poor. That's what somebody's saying in the comments right now. You're too poor to be given this opportunity to become wealthy. Even though I was far from poor. Let's go back again to the time frame. We're talking 2001 here, and you're knocking down two bills, and you're about 30 years old, and you came from absolute dog shit nothing, 8 years of time to that level. You'd think somebody'd break down the door to get to you. But no, because they wanted someone who was absolutely indebted out the ass. So when we look at debt, we need to understand that it can be that powerful. Otherwise, we can't use it. But yet, we already talked about how having a mortgage is a really good decision for most people in most situations. Now, I'm not big on, but once the mortgage was satisfied, refinancing the home. To me, that doesn't make sense either, because now that's out the window. I don't need capital to push against it anymore, and I don't have capital draining off of it anymore. But I also wouldn't fault the person who knew exactly why they were refinancing the property at that point. Like, I own 15 properties, and I'm refinancing this one for cash flow this year, and I'll refinance a bigger one next year and use it to pay off this. Like, if it's a cash flow strategy to pay no taxes, that's good too. Because I talked about this yesterday, and this is a place that I had to eventually, as I grew up, and I mean literally grew up, and realized that the world I was told about wasn't here with my grandparents, and say, Grandma and Grandpa were absolutely right for their time, but this isn't their time, it's my time. And so my grandparents on both sides despised debt. They despised debt. About the only debt they were okay with was a mortgage, and that was one side. The other side, since they had paid their mortgage off during World War fucking II, like, to them, like, you never even think about this. But yet it's how they got where they were. But they also did it again at a time when things were different. So their idea was cash on the barrel. But we just don't live in that world right now. Bitcoin's trying to pull us back into that world, but we don't live in it yet. So there's a place for debt strategically utilized. But if you understand how dangerous it is, then the last thing you're going to buy with debt is a fucking TV set or a video game system or your groceries this week. Things that are consumable do not get bought with debt. They don't. Things that are depreciary, that go down in value over time, not artificially down, like depreciating real estate, that's an artificial, it's a phantom loss. Things that actually go down in value. So buying a car with debt is dangerous because you're buying something for $50,000 today that in 2 years, when you still owe 40 on it, is worth 30. But even that has a place. Even that has a place, because in this world we live in, you need a vehicle to get to work, and the used car market right now is dog shit. So you just have to understand how you're leveraging debt and see it as a tool, and also know what your exit strategy is. Then how about one of our favorite topics that some of you are all technologically Luddites all of a sudden? Artificial intelligence. Now, I'm going to tell you something about this before we dig into this one. Many of you are out there, you have a cell phone, and you don't just have a cell phone, you have a smartphone, you use all kinds of apps on it. You use the internet every day, including to listen to this podcast and others. You have a smart television, right? You have all this technology. And when it all started in the 90s, you knew some old crusty fucker that you now are, who said, I ain't doing that internet bullshit, right? You had somebody like my dad around you. My dad used to say, I'd go home to work, like when I was transitioning from Texas back to PA in the years that I worked for Fluke. And we hadn't bought a house yet, and my wife was still living down here, and I was flying back and forth. And so I was running basically out of his house, and I'd sit down, and I'd connect to the internet, and I would do all my work. He's like, who are you talking to? I'm talking to my rep down there in Virginia. You're going to get a big bill someday for all this internet stuff, right? Like, just no connection whatsoever to what was going on. No understanding that I'm on a local phone, because it's dial-up days, right? I'm on a local phone number, and we're sending email. They're going to send you a bill. Like, he was ridiculous, and he still is, okay? Those of you that are scared of AI, that's you today. You adopted all the fucking technology right up to this one point, and that's where you decided, I'm not going to go any further. And I've said this, if you're 60 years old, you have a job on a W-2, you're 5 years from retirement, you've got money saved up, your debt's low, and your life's going to be pretty much the same no matter what. If you want to do that, go ahead. If you're 25 years old and you're thinking that way, if you're 30 years old and you're thinking that way, if you're 40 years old and you have a business and you're thinking that way, somebody like me is going to beat your fucking brains down into your ass, because they're going to leverage these productivity tools and they are going to murder you. They either are going to, if you're a one-man show against a one-man show, that you're going to be like a one-man show going against a 10-man show. If you're a 10-man show, you're going to be like a 10-man show going against a 100-man show at a fraction of the cost. And so you can, yes, it was AOL, by the way, Chuck, right? AOL. Yeah, I would log in and go, you got mail. My old man was like, who is that? Who's talking on your machine? What is that? God damn. That is some of you guys today with AI. I'm sorry. There's an old cartoon, and it's how Democrats want to ban everything they don't understand. And it starts out, it's like there's a dude making a fire, and there's these older elders that are back there with their spears and their clubs and shit, like they're going to beat the fire. And they're like, we need to ban this. It's dangerous. And then the horse is pulling a buggy, and they're like, we shouldn't be doing this. And then, like, it's a car, and they're with their horse and buggy. Like, this is reality. This is happening. But it can be a risk. So we need to use AI and technologies, all these technologies, without it using us. And that requires an awareness of what it does, how it tracks us, and how to, you know, mitigate that. Using things like an above phone, using things like a Start9 or Umbral server is a big part of that, right? But we need to be able to benefit from automation, AI tools, and online business while maintaining privacy and control. And we actually can do that. And if it's not part of your plan, then somebody like me is taking business you could have had. Plain and simple. I put this show together this morning in 15 minutes. Normally, without all the tools that I have available to me to do it now, it would have taken me 2 hours. I put an hour and 45 minutes of productivity back in my day by using AI tools. Does this sound like an AI podcast, an AI-driven podcast? It's not. I didn't let it take away who Jack Spirko is. I still have all my relevant experience. I'm still drawing on things that happened 20 minutes ago and 20 years ago to tell you the story that goes along with this show. What do I mean by I used AI for it? I used it to give me 20 bullet points, narrow them down to 10, and refine those 10, and do that in 2 minutes instead of 20. I used it to write the intro, the promotional blurb, and do the SEO for the product that was going to come out the other end as show notes. And it was AI that gave me the idea for these two shows in the first place in a way that wasn't even related to looking for an idea. And that's why these 2 days of shows happened. So you want to compete with me, you better be able to compete on that level. And you're already competing with someone who's really good at podcasting, that's been doing it for 16 years, and has been a public speaker one way or another for almost 30 now. And you're going to do it without any of these tools? You really think you're going to get your head kicked in, no matter what it is, right? We have to start thinking at a higher level. And if you don't want to do things like give away too much of your personal information, don't. Create shadow accounts. There's a lot of ways to do this. I can't go into all of them today. It's just that you need to figure out what you're not comfortable with, why you're not comfortable with. Is that real? And if it is, how do I mitigate it so I can still benefit from the technology? Because I eventually see most of us having our own individually trained AIs that run for us, by us, on our machine. Basically, as a corollary of Bitcoin, when Bitcoin started, there were ways to self-custody, have your own wallet, paper wallet, stuff like that. But it was actually pretty hard. There weren't a lot of options. You had to be kind of a techno nerd to do it. If you knew how to do that, you're probably mining on a laptop and, you know, mining billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin that you were going to piss away on a pizza or something because you didn't really know yet. So what ended up happening was people were holding their Bitcoin on exchanges. They thought of Bitcoin as like an account rather than actual ownership. And then Mt. Gox got hacked and lots of millionaires became broke overnight. They didn't have the ability to self-custody. And then we discovered Coinbase, and lots of people did dumb things on Coinbase, like pay for all kinds of shit with Bitcoin without paying any taxes on it. And one day the federal government said, please, we would like to know. And Coinbase, to their credit, said, no, we're not just going to give you this information. And a federal court said Coinbase doesn't have to. So the federal government, being the federal government, went back and we said, we want people that meet these specific, more narrowly defined criteria that had significant flows in and out of Bitcoin that we know should have paid taxes and we think didn't. And a judge said, that's okay. And then those people had all their data handed right over to the federal government. So much for privacy. Even from a company who tried to keep your data private, actually made their best effort and failed. So what did we tell you? Self-custody. Own it. Not your keys, not your coin. That's where AI's gone. That's where AI's gone. You're going to be able to buy a computer that's going to do 99% of what you want it to do without telling anybody anything about what you're doing. You're going to be able to run your AI unit mostly not even connected to the internet. Now, you may need it to, it may be a lot like, in some instances, it may end up being a lot like this hardware wallet I'm holding up for those on the video, in that it doesn't know what you need it to know to do what you want it to do. So basically, you open up a gateway and you allow it to gather that data, collect it, store it, and then you shut the gateway. And there'll be tech, too, that's basically your AI, when it does AI things on the internet, is running over Tor. And you're not going to have to be a fucking genius. You're not going to have to be some fake-ass thing like, you know, Garcia on Criminal Minds. Well, let me do my magic, you mere mortals, blah, 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 blah. Hey, you just found out the fucking information you could have got off somebody's fucking social media account. Wow, I'm impressed. I'm going to hack into the database. You're the fucking FBI. You don't have to hack into the fucking database. It's all bullshit. You're not going to have to be that person. There's going to be a fucking switch. People are like, the market's going to market. Market's market. That's what they do, right? And it'll be like, you know, on, off, connect, disconnect. That's what it's going to be, right? That's what's going to happen. But you need to know how to do these things. And you should be using the tools that are available now, because if you don't, when those more advanced tools come, you're going to start at a zero, and the people you're competing with are going to be starting at a 9 of 10, by the way. I'm just saying. And the younger you are, the more true that is. When I was in high school, I remember, and this is why I can type today, I took typing in high school, 2 years of it. And we used electric typewriters. And when you made a mistake, you had to use whiteout to fix it. And if you like left a letter out of a word, then you had to like use whiteout and then like squeeze it, and hopefully you could fit it in so you didn't have to retype the whole thing, which you might have had to do. And I remember my teacher one day saying, y'all really need to get better at what you're doing, but don't sweat it too much. None of you are ever going to use a typewriter in your workplace. When you leave here, these will probably be the last typewriters you will ever see. And I remember asking her, her name was Miss Matunis. I said, well, then why are we doing this? She goes, because the school doesn't have enough money to buy computers yet, but the people you work for will. So when you make a mistake on a computer, and I used to go by JJ back then, and she said, all you're going to have to do, JJ, is just erase it and then rewrite. What? Like, yeah, and you want to use, like, we learned how to use carbon paper and shit. Like, oh, let me know, just print 3. That's what's going to happen. Okay. There was no world in which those people around me and people that even graduated 5 years before me, by the time they were mature in an office environment, if they were going to work in an office, were not going to use computers and not going to use the internet. Even though it didn't really exist in the form that it would be in at that point yet, the path was clear. You need these base skills because this is your future, whether you believe in it or not. Those of you who are like, I know some high schoolers and some young college students and shit listen to me. There is no world that you're going to be in an office environment or even a lot of trade jobs that you're not going to use AI in the future. Machinist, you're going to use fucking AI. I'm telling you right now. You work in an auto parts store. You're going to be using fucking AI to find compatible parts. There is no place this isn't going to touch. And that can sound ridiculous. And it sounded ridiculous in 1988 when you told somebody this internet thing that's basically like a bunch of chat boards and shit and kids, you know, with Commodores walking around, pieces of paper with all these phone numbers on them and shit, and they dial into one thing, like all commerce is going to go through the internet. Almost all financials are going to go through the, everything is going to be internet. Almost all business communications are going to be electronic through this internet thing. You sounded like you were smoking crack. This is way more obvious than that was, and that was pretty obvious. Chuck says he had a Commodore 64. My best friend, a guy named David Carlo, had a Commodore 64. And by the time I saved enough money to pay for half a computer, and my dad said he'd give me the money for the other half if I did that, probably because, see, he was a man of his word, but he always liked to give his word on something he never thought was going to happen. Kind of like when you say to somebody, hey, do you need me to come over? And you know they're going to say no, but you get credit for offering, kind of like that, right? So I saved money up to buy this fucking computer, and he had to come up with it. And by then, the 128D had come out. So my first computer I bought, not that I had, was a 128D Commodore. Anyway, it's just reality. Then you've got, you know, digital and financial autonomy. And this is where we get into things like using Bitcoin. We get into self-hosting. We get into private banking. That's going to be a thing. Though I think private banking is going to be Bitcoin-based. It's going to be Fediments, if you're familiar with that. If not, look it up, Fediments. So the problem with private banking is if you're going to be a bank, right, then you need to make money or there's no point in taking care of other people's money. There has to be some kind of a cost, a fee, a service charge. So banks made money, let's say in the 80s or the 90s, pretty much by saying, well, you'll have a checking account, right? You need to pay your bills. You're like, yeah. And they would just put a fee on a checking. It's $5 a month to have a checking account up to, let's say, 25 checks, and checks beyond that are a quarter apiece. And people paid it. They paid it for the convenience and security. I'm going to get an electric bill. I have to pay the electric bill. And some of you are young, you don't even know what the fuck I'm talking about. What the fuck's a check? That's what I get a paycheck, but I never see it. I just get an alert that said it was deposited. Right? See, we used to have these things called checkbooks. You had a little ledger in them, and you kept your balance. And the electric company would send you a bill, and you would sit, and I know these still exist, but most people don't use them. You'd sit down, and the electric bill was $113.21, and you'd write on this check $113.13 for cents, right? 13 cents or whatever cents I said. And then you would actually write the number out and then you would sign it and you would take that and you'd put it in an envelope with an invoice that came with it, the part you detached, and you'd put a stamp on it. That was another 25 cents or whatever it was at the time. And you'd lick the envelope and you sealed it up and you put it in the mail. It went to the electric company and somebody opened it, Karen opened it, right? And she took it out and she made a little entry in their electronic journal. They were that sophisticated by that, even though you weren't. And it said paid. And then they didn't turn your power off. And you and your little ledger in that book, you wrote down paid electric company bill 11313, and you deducted it. That way you didn't write a bad check and go to jail for writing bad checks, which was considered theft by check. That's the world we lived in 25 years ago. 90% of people paid their bills around the year 2000 that way. Now, almost everybody has banking where you pay your bill with a click. Pay this bill. Pay, you set it up or whatever. It's automatic withdrawal, whatever it is. You pay it that way. Now, I actually had this idea to set up electronic bill paying for people in the late 90s. And I had a friend said, nobody will ever do that. And I was dumb enough to say, well, you're probably right. I probably wouldn't have went anywhere with it anyway. I'd have the capital for something like that. He said, people aren't going to want electronic bills paid. They want to be able to see, like, see that all went away. This is why we have to realize this progression is going to continue, but yet we need to figure out how we can do certain things with our money that we've traditionally relied on banks for. Be your own bank is not just about a payment system or storing your money. There is a place for, let's say, two corporations to be able to extend each other lines of credit. And if you're doing that without something in the middle to keep you honest, then you run into more problems and potential disputes. Where we can actually, with technology that exists today, using the Lightning Network for Bitcoin, and if we want a stable currency, which businesses require, we cannot have a volatility. These people are like, Bitcoin only, Bitcoin only. You're an idiot. As much as I am a Bitcoin bull, you are an idiot. It is not functionally possible in this world to run a business that has both a payroll of any size and a supply chain, widgets in, widgets out, right? Or widgets in, assembled widgets out, on a volatile currency without eventually going bankrupt. But we can use Bitcoin to move USD in a crypto form, that's stablecoin. That's another place I'm okay with. Do you know why I like stable coins or why I don't consider them a scam, or I don't know how you want to put this? All the crypto bros, right? All the, yo, man, look at XRP, man. Yo, it's the next thing, right? It's the next Bitcoin only better. All this shit, it's about one thing, making money. It's not about enabling commerce, and it never was and it never will be. It's if you buy a whole bunch of this garbage, it might go up and you'll be rich. Stablecoins make no such promise. In fact, they make a complete opposite promise. This is a dollar, and it will be a dollar tomorrow. It'll be a dollar next week. The dollar will lose value, and this will lose value along with it, but it is relatively stable for the purpose of business. So what these Fedimints will be able to do with smart contract-enabled Fedimint agreements with being anonymous is allow Company A and Company B to use a common ledger with triple entry accounting to account for their commerce back and forth. That's just one example. Beyond what most people are going to do, but that's how advanced this is getting. And then my last point is the realization of where we started out. So we bookend this and come back to a solid ground. Total escape is a dangerous myth. Believing in something that you can do that you can never do, always results in misery and pain eventually. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, dream stealing. I'm sure plenty of people told Orville and Wilbur Wright, you will never make a bicycle with a motor that fucking flies. And they said, no, we know that. We're going to use what we know about bicycles to make this thing called an airplane. Yeah, but you're never going to make one of those either. I'm not talking about having a goal that's so high that the average person looking at it, even an I was going to say the average idiot, but no, the average intelligent person. In fact, the more intelligent they are, the more reasons they'll come with why it won't work. That's not what I mean. But this idea that the average person today is going to completely 100% exit the systems. I'm going to grow all my own food. I'm going to only buy from my own barter network. We're only going to use, you know, crypto XYZ or Bitcoin or whatever it is. We're not going to rely, like, so you're never going to have chocolate again. Because there's no way cocoa beans are getting the fuck to America without going through the fiat system in some way, shape, or form. So you're never going to have, okay, fine. Never going to have coffee. If fuck bananas. And I'm not even big on eating bananas, but my point is there's something that everybody wants in their life that is global in nature, and it's not made in your backyard. Where you get your fucking salt from? That's even something you can crack that nut. If you live in Florida, you can make your own salt. If you live near the coast, easy. You can go to the ocean and evaporate water. You get salt. You might even turn it into a gray market business, selling it to people that want real salt off Florida's Gulf Coast, made by a fellow agorist. But are you going to do that with everything? No, you're not. Are you using agorist internet right now to listen to me? No, you're not, are you? Are you listening to me on some sort of device that you cobbled together yourself? No. I got a butt phone like you said. Yeah, and how'd you pay for it? I paid with Bitcoin. Okay, where'd the phone come from? Where'd the phone come from? Phone came from fucking China. Right? The phone came from China. They stripped the OS out of it. They installed an open source agorist, I would call it, you know, graphene, an anarcho OS, an open source OS. Absolutely. You've moved way toward at least the gray side of the flag here. But where'd the copper come from? Inside the device. Where'd the plastic on the outside of the device come? Where'd the glass come from? There's a fundamental reality to economics in this that is something that central planners don't want to accept. And that is the flat out reality that people follow incentives. I think it was Milton Friedman that broke it down with a pencil as to how amazing it was that we could even have a pencil. Where'd the wood come from? Where'd the little metal piece that holds the eraser come from? Where'd the rubber that the eraser's made come from? Where'd the graphite come from in the pencil? It's not actually lead. How did that all get into one place to be assembled into the pencil? Who made the machinery that assembled it into a pencil? Where did the iron that made the steel in the machinery come from? Oh, wait a minute. Where'd the box come from? Oh, that's a paper product. It's made that the pencil was shipped in. Well, that came from a tree somewhere. Where'd the chainsaw that cut the tree down come from? Where'd the housing of the chainsaw come from? Like, do you realize that when you look at a pencil or a bottle of Tylenol, definitely a cell phone, a pair of stainless steel tongs that are used to work on the aquaculture setting of a fish tank, a microphone, a computer, a camera, a t-shirt. Where does it all come? Like, how many people touched different components of getting it to you before you ever saw it? You don't know who any of them are. How much life essence is in this t-shirt that Joel Riles gave me? Where'd the material come from? Where did the print come from? How did it get here? In the mail. Well, actually, Joel gave it to me, but it probably got to him on a UPS truck. Who built the truck? Where'd the fuel in the truck? You start to see how this, like, the collective cooperation necessary for something as simple as a pencil or a t-shirt or a coffee cup to get into your hands is probably 1,000 people minimum touch something at some point in the supply chain to get it to you. Okay? And most of that stuff is in the matrix. Now, if you want to go out in your backyard and dig up clay and make your own cup, God bless you. I promise you, you're not going to do it with everything in your life. I use a 3D printer to print my parts, Jack. Where'd the freaking, what do you call it? The plastic. What do you call it? The media come from? How did you get the program you use, where did it come from? Oh, I downloaded it from a site. It's run by anarchists. Over what? The internet? Who provided you that? You see what I'm saying? There's no complete escape. There's no complete escape. The only way you get complete escape is to go live like a hermit in the mountains. And if you want to, go ahead. Filament, that's what I was looking for. You know, the fact that you can see me right now isn't just about the internet and the camera and the microphone. How about the fact that there's a light on Where'd the light bulb come from? Where'd the electricity for the light bulb came from? I'm off grid. Where'd your light bulb come from? Do you make your own light bulbs? Where'd the glass come from? Where'd the metal on the little screwy part of the light bulb come from? Where'd the tungsten or whatever the hell the filaments, the element inside the light bulb was made out of? Where'd that come from? Where'd the box come from the light bulb was in so it could get to you without being broken? Where'd the LED in your new light bulb come from? Who invented the technology? How were they paid? It's a dangerous myth that we can fully step out of this because not everything in it is bad. Remember Cypher? I know the steak's not real, but it tastes good anyway. Well, the steak in our matrix comes from a cow. It is real. It's as real can get. And you may be able to shorten the supply line to get that piece of red meat into your mouth, like I do by buying it from a guy that literally lives less than 1 mile that way down the road from me. But I don't want to process a cow. So my buddy Odom down there that I buy a cow from, he puts that cow on a trailer that went through all that shit to be a trailer. And it sits on tires and went through all that shit to be a tire. And it's attached to a truck that went all that shit to be a truck. And every piece of it did that. And he drives it 45 minutes away to a place out in Weatherford, where the guy that works out there has one of his employees make the cow go night-night for good, cuts the cow up, and then I pay him in fiat. And I, even though I get the cow from a less than a mile away, I have to drive. It's not really 40. It's about 45 minutes round trip. I have to drive about 45 minutes to pick my beef up. I'm sure if I wanted it delivered, that could be arranged, but I got to pay for it. You see what I'm saying? This is not all bad. In fact, all of this works because everybody's in and out of the matrix to some degree. Everybody is out of the matrix to the point with, if you cut yourself, you bleed. It's not fake blood. It's not holographic blood. It's wet and it's warm and it fucking hurts. It's real. The control is the artificial mechanism. All of the control of the matrix is counter to the natural flow. Think about what I just laid out for you. No one has to go round people up, put a gun in their mouth, put a chain around their neck, and force them to do any of these things. And if you took away all of the debt slavery, if you took away all of the manipulation by central planners, if you took away the taxation, if you took away all of it, humans would still behave this way. You would still have a desire to live more than hand to mouth. You would still want to solve problems for others and have problems solved for you. You would still come up with a form of monetary energy to exchange with each other. And you would still have to pay for a road. One way or another, we would have to pay for roads to exist. You'd have to pay for a building to exist. It would be built into the cost of using the service or the good. So we are all in and out. The question is, do you know the line? Do you know the reality? Do you know when you're being manipulated and controlled? And do you know how to say, I don't like that, so I'm not going to let it happen? Do you know how to say, that is control and manipulation, and I know what it is, but I know the one thing I want from it, so I'm willing to partake in it for that? Big thing is, do you have mental sovereignty? Or do you believe you have to do these things because somebody else said so? Do you believe the solution lies within, or do you believe the solution is someone doing it for you? Because even when you pay somebody to do something, who really created the solution? You did. You paid for it. The reason the handyman exists, who will come over and fix the problem on your porch that you either don't have time for, don't feel that you can do, or feel you do wrong, is because you exist to pay him. And you did something of value somewhere else. This is a natural state of humanity. Every human group that evolved past beating each other over the head anytime they wanted something has used commerce to get there. The ancient stones with the hole in the middle that never even moved, that became a form of currency, that one stone could actually be owned in parts by multiple people just by the chief saying, we now recognize Bill owns one-tenth of this stone. Even that with this hard reality working. See, humans, we evolved. I don't care what you think from a religious standpoint, whether you believe we were created or we came from pure evolution or something else, which is what I believe, we still evolved. From the time the first human walks to now, we evolved not just biologically, but socially. And at some point we decided, I really don't like the fact that because I have this thing that I worked really hard for, if somebody else wants one, the way they get it is killing me. I don't like that. I don't feel very safe and secure that way. By the way, even if I can kill somebody that has it to get mine, I don't really feel good about that either. I don't want to go out and murder somebody to get their shit. I don't want to enslave them to get their shit. I don't want to beat them up to take their shit. And I don't want somebody doing it to me. And when I see it happening to somebody else, I want to intervene and protect them. And at the same time, I want some level of protection. And so the psychopath said the state is the solution. What was the solution? The solution is commerce. People will do things to earn things. And people will recognize that other people want things, and people will build systems to provide for them. Old motivational speaker version, if I want to get what I want, the best thing I can do is help others get what they want. It's the truth. It's how you can buy a Sharpie marker, which is every bit as complex and all the different systems that had to interact with each other in some level of a trustless mechanistic way to put this in a box, end up in an Amazon warehouse, and I clicked the link and agreed to give up some of my life force in the form of fiat so this Sharpie marker would end up in my hand. This is proof, and everything in your life is proof that humans are naturally cooperative beings, that we prefer trade and commerce to conflict and war. And if you look through the history of warfare, what do we have conflict and warfare over? Scarcity. It's always been scarcity. If you go back in time, there was a time when Roman soldiers were paid part of their salary in salt. It's the root of the word salary is salt. There were times when people fought wars over the control of salt. There were wars fought over pepper because it grew in only certain places and it was hard to get. And you had to move it across like the Silk Road on the back of fucking animals. And you could only bring so much at once. You could only grow so much at once. And the people that were making money off it realized if we bring too much, the price will go down. So they had artificial scarcity added to natural scarcity. Scarcity works for one thing well with human beings, and one thing only. The monetary unit itself should be scarce, and then everything else can be abundant. And I'll say, does it work? When's the last time that we had a war over salt and pepper? When have you seen a war fought over anything that truly is abundant in the world? And how many things do we think? How many things do we think were scarce that weren't scarce? What was scarce is the ability to produce it, the ability to extract it, and the ability to move it. Once we figured out how to do those things, people barely fight over food anymore. Food is so abundant, we don't have wars over food. Now, you go somewhere like sub-Saharan Africa, you may see people kill each other over a sack of grain. That's where it's scarce. Here, in the developed world, when we've created surpluses, we don't fight. The world I'm talking about, the world of minimizing the matrix and its control mechanism and expanding liberty for all, is the world of creating abundance. Why do you think I teach how to build wealth? You make wealth abundant, it becomes something that's less seen as something to envy. How to produce food. The more abundant our food, the less our expensive food. The less conflict. Abundance of water. There's almost no place in the world that's truly scarce of water. Jack, haven't you heard of deserts? Yeah, you know how much water falls on a desert in a year? More than you need. We just need better technology to infiltrate, absorb, slow, spread, and reserve some for use later. And there are some places that are really, really, really scarce on water, just so I don't go too insane. But even those, we have places where people have built permaculture projects with no irrigation, at least once established, with rainfall under 3 inches. Neil Spackman did that in Saudi Arabia. So when you're saying, but I only get 15 inches a year, you're drowning compared to Neil and his system. It's all about adaptation. And adaptation is the way to abundance, and abundance is the way out of the matrix. Hope you guys enjoyed that today. I really didn't pay attention to questions and stuff like that, so I don't have any questions or anything to answer. I want to real quick talk about our item of the day today. And I want you to know the item of the day today was the best selling product in 2024 on T-Spaz for the year, for the whole year. Like not dollars, but quantity and total number of units. And the day that I dropped it was December 2nd. It was basically available for 29 days of the entire year last year, and I sold more units of it. Now, there was Christmas, but it was for so everybody else had Christmas, too, all the other products. It is the Hamilton Beach 3-in-1 Electric Egg Cooker, and I'll tell you why it sold so well. It solves a problem, and that problem is I go out and I get my eggs from Henrietta, and I bring them in, and I want hard-boiled eggs. So I boil the eggs, and I try to peel them, and it's a pain in the ass, and they don't peel right. That's the primary problem it solves. You stick eggs in this thing, you follow the instructions, they peel like a freaking banana. It just works. I've had one bad egg that failed because it was a bad egg and just was messed up and nasty, and I got by our kenneling. I've had one egg not peeled that was actually a good egg, and it peeled okay. And so it works for that, and people love that. People love that. Carson says, somebody asked if my first Bitcoin podcasts are still relevant today. If they're Bitcoin breakouts, yes. If you go back and listen to me talk about crypto before there was a Bitcoin breakout, there's a lot of things that I believe back then that didn't pan out. I'll say that. But I'm going to tell you that the Bitcoin stuff itself is pretty much solid all the way through. All right. So anyway, this Hamilton Beach egg cooker, it solves that problem. It also makes really cool omelets in this little pan that comes with it that it makes with steam, and they just come out so freaking delicious. There was one thing that didn't work, and I tried something different today, and it fixed it. So 3-in-1, it makes basically omelets where you scramble it up, and you put it in this little dish, and you set it inside there. It makes your boiled eggs, and it makes them perfectly. It also comes with this other cup that has like two cavities in it that's supposed to make poached eggs. They're never really going to be poached. What you're really trying to do is make a fully cooked white with a runny yolk to whatever level you want that yolk. I was never happy with it. And I looked at it, and I realized what the problem was. That stupid cup with the two sides to it loses a lot of space to making the partition. And so you end up with a really thick white. So by the time you actually cook the white all the way, the yolk is freaking hard. Not what you're looking for. And I was like, self, somebody in marketing wanted it to do three things. So somebody in marketing told somebody in fabrication to make another thing. So they made another thing. The person in marketing probably didn't ask themselves, do we need another thing? The answer is you don't. The one that makes the omelets, I made it today. I put two eggs in there, and I'm going to have to adjust the amount of water I use in it a little bit, but it came out beautiful because it's shallower and it doesn't isolate. So two eggs in it gave me a perfect thickness of the white, and it came out a little bit overdone on the yolks, but again, I'll just adjust my water down. So now it does all three things. Check this thing out. Again, I sold more of them last year than any other single item on the website for T-Spaz, including the Vivor stuff, not just the Amazon stuff. I mean, it just blew everything away, because what happened is people tried it and like got in the groups and stuff and said, oh yeah, this thing's awesome. Today, Eric Myers and John Dowie agreed it was really good. If you're in our groups and you know Dowie and Eric, that's a unique thing that they agree on something right there, right? Dowie's grumpy about everything, bitches about everything. If he's like, I use this like three times a week. It's way better than I thought, right? So check it out if you haven't yet. And with that, we'll wrap up. I appreciate you guys being here today. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about something that kind of fits in this world really good. Let me see if I can find, I can't think of her name right now. There was a lady that put in a guest form, and she should be on my calendar, but for some reason, it's not there. So, it's going to be called Save Your Town. And it was one of these things that came in and this late that, you know, that's filled out the guest form. And basically she's worked in this, you know, kind of mid-sized town and completely revitalized it. And not everything's worked out well, but it's way better off than it was. And they did something crazy. Like instead of hiding the fact they had empty buildings, They advertised that they had empty buildings all over the world. Come here and do something. Look at the space we have. Turns out that works. When you have something to offer, offer it. And so I was looking at it. I looked at her website, and I'm like, I think this would be interesting. It kind of reminded me of the Strong Towns guy, but in a different angle and maybe a better angle. But I'm like, I'm always skeptical when I don't know a person. I get a guest app. Like, you can get somebody that has great material, and you bring them on, and you're like, oh, God, what have I done? You know, they're just like, they can't talk. They can't explain things. I think way back when I brought Jacob Lundfisser on, oh, my God. Early Retirement Extreme. I read the book. I was like, I can't believe I got this author. Oh, he was terrible as a guest. I had to spend like 4 hours to edit his interview and take out ahs, ums, and pauses, and then it sounded okay. I think in his interview, I took out 45 minutes of dead space, ums, and ahs. And then it sounded good. He wanted to come back. I'm like, yeah, I think we covered it all. So I'm always skeptical. So I looked this girl up, and I should say lady, because she's probably about my age. And I find that she did a TED talk, but not like, like one of the TEDx talks. And I pull up her TED talk, and I'm like, this chick is freaking fire. So I'm excited. Again, I cannot remember her name for the life of me right now. And Dorothy still has my paperwork for tomorrow. So, but I'm just going to tell you, tune in tomorrow for Save Our Town. This works well with an initiative that I'm trying to get straight into my mind before I fully announce it, to rebuild America's small towns and actually grow little towns without growing them too much, and to create clusters, kind of like a freedom cell model for towns. And so I'm really excited about this, both for what she's done and for what we might be able to extract from her method to something even better. With that, I'll catch you tomorrow with that interview. We will do an expert council show on Thursday, Friday flashback on Friday, and then we'll do it all again.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a